This is a podcast from policyreview.tv.
I'm going to talk about London for a little while, but because we've also talked about Sheffield and other areas, I don't feel like I have to apologise quite so much. But partly because London decided to take a slightly different approach to the establishment of a regional planning arrangement. So rather than going down the track of the sub-regional working arrangements. We could have spent some time doing that because we've got a history in London of spending an inordinate amount of time, particularly if you involve the mayor in the discussions, about trying to decide how London should be divided up, because there's all sorts of pretty ways of dividing it. However, when you looked at things like travel to learn patterns, it only really made sense to look at London as a London as a whole. And the reasons for that were really because of the amazing amount of travel that occurred across the London region. You can see from some of those statistics that resident learners in different areas varied quite considerably. And in some areas, you'd have as few as 20% of residents learning within their borough. Over half of the boroughs across London had more residents travelling outside of their area to learn than learning within their area. So if you take account of that, you take account of the travel patterns and the way the tubes travel, all of those sorts of things, it really made little sense to think about London in small sort of local authority groups. So for learner choice, there was a decision made that we should take London as a whole. Secondly, in terms of an employer framework and the way in which we should consider meeting the skill needs of employers and their requirements going forward, again, London seemed like the sensible sort of planning framework to go with. So that decision was made, and that's what we're living with. And fairly understandably, the department sort of asked questions about whether this was a rather high-risk strategy, given that you have got 32 or 33 local authorities if you include the City of London. So The quote I've got up there simply recognises that actually, although London was going with a fairly high-risk strategy, what we also determined to do, and this predated my involvement in the regional planning group, but we decided to actually have a dry run last year, and in the last year, in the current planning year, we've been undertaking what we've referred to as a transitional year, or sometimes rather unattractively, a wet run year. So the dry run year was actually quite interesting in itself, and that was evaluated, and we looked at how that had worked, and so there were some obviously clear messages that came out of that in terms of capacity of local authorities, the ability to bust the budget, the questions around data, and the inordinate appetite that everybody seems to have to challenge every single bit of data that's ever presented anywhere. All of these came out quite clearly, and they've all informed what we would do in terms of the transitional year. So I'm going to speak for a few minutes on both the RPG governance structure and how we've organised the RPG itself, because it is slightly different, but also what we've learned through the transitional year and what some of the successes and challenges have been from that. So in terms of the RPG itself and its functions, we have got this single planning body. We've decided that the RPG should basically set the vision for London and should provide that sort of strategic leadership across the capital. And in that respect, very much mirroring what the London Skills and Employment Board have done with respect to adult skills. That, as you may know, was prompted by the involvement of us having a mayor in London, but certainly the desire to say, let's look at London, let's look at the adult skills budget, and let's see how we can pull all the key investors in the adult skills world, the Job Centre Plus, the Regional Development Agency, how can we pull them together in order to get something which is slightly more coherent? So our job in London in terms of providing strategic leadership for 14 to 19 is to say, who are the key players? So we have in that group, we have the Regional Development Agency, we have the Government Office for London, we have the London Skills and Employment Board and joint chairmanship of that group, so that we can make sure that that makes some sort of sense as a whole, because we very much see that you have to have that economic development awareness and the skills needs awareness, as well as the sort of learner choice agenda, coming together at a regional level, as well as was referred to previously about making sure that happens at a local authority level. So we've got that function to carry out. We've also got a key function about trying to coordinate provision across the whole of the boroughs in London, and enabling boroughs to work together, local authorities to work together, to talk about some of the plans that they have for the boroughs next door. that could impact on the boroughs next door, because they can previously quite happily talk about, well, let's establish a new school sixth form, let's do something slightly different in our area, and Partnership for Schools would have supported that, and actually the local authority next door would have had really very little reason to object to it. You know, why would you object to your colleagues next door attracting additional funding from Partnership for Schools? Now suddenly it's a different world, and you're having to think, actually, a new sixth form being built just slightly around the corner, what does that mean in terms of displacement? Does that meet the needs of my resident learners? So that's sort of coordination role. Clearly a key role around meeting skills needs across London, and us also undertaking a certain level of regional commissioning. We try to keep this to sort of a sensible level, but there are some providers for whom it makes little sense for them to be commissioned at a local authority level. Some of this is being looked at nationally, and you've got some of your very big providers like Rathbone who are involved still in national discussion with the YPLA about what makes most sense for them in terms of commissioning. But in London we've got specialist Agriculture and Horticultural College, which has got a sort of a hub and spokes model, and we're going to commission that ourselves as the regional planning group. And then finally, yes, we've got a role and responsibility around dispute resolution and the complaints panel, and I'm hoping not to have to engage in that particular function too much. I'm not going to go through the principles, but I wanted to include the slides so that you had them accessible to you if you want to download the presentations from today. But just to say that we have agreed a set of principles to which the regional planning group and our local authorities have all signed up. And they have literally signed up. All 32 local authorities did, you know, put their names to the submission and have subsequently made that commitment more formalised through the review of the governance arrangements. And the governance arrangements for London, for the Regional Planning Group, involves London councils. And London Council sits works on behalf of all of the local authorities in London and includes all of the leaders of all of the local authorities in London in some key decision making. So they have some experience at the moment about both agreeing and disagreeing on some London issues, and the sorts of things that they're currently work on set me in fairly good stead, because they're things like the Freedom Pass for London or the parking charges for London. So the next obvious thing is the 14 to 19 provision in London. But what I'm trying to say is that what they have experience of is they have experience of agreeing and disagreeing. They have experience of having to reach consensus, and that's been an absolute key and background for us in terms of our decision making, because not all of this, as I've said, can be done at a local level. There does have to be that regional perspective. So we've been looking at the governance structure and trying to review the membership. The membership of the regional planning group is very wide. It does include providers. Mike mentioned earlier on the Work-Based Learning Alliance are involved in it. We've got three AOC representatives. So it seeks to be an inclusive group, but it also does recognise that we work in a political environment. And although that's changing and fairly sort of lively at the moment, we do need some cross-party support to some of the decisions we're making at a regional level, because we can't afford to unpick them. We can't afford to set them up only to be taken apart again in a very short period of time. And there I'm not talking about the establishment of quangos, etc. That's beyond me, and I'm leaving that on one side. What I am talking about is support for things like academies, which present very specific challenges to us in London, with a commitment to still introduce an awful lot more academies. And if they continue to deliver a traditional agenda and a traditional curriculum, we're going to find ourselves getting no closer to being able to deliver on our RPA commitment. So we've also looked at what we can commission in terms of regional activity. So those have been the sorts of priorities that we've had in terms of internal activity. And the external activity has been about this full transitional year which we've been running. And I wanted to just take you briefly through what we've actually done in respect of that. And it started off with us agreeing for London a regional statement of priorities. It predated the national statement of priorities. Luckily enough, it managed to work out what they were going to be, because you wouldn't really expect them to change. They are about how do we get to the raising the participation age. They are still about issues to do with higher participation and higher levels of achievement within the system. So we've been working on that aspect. And what we've done so far is that local authorities at the beginning of this process looked at common data sets, had a look at what that meant for them, and that was information provided by the shadow YPLA. So they've had some experience also of being able to feed back on the sorts of data that's provided to them. Does it help us to make decisions? Does it help us to make commissioning decisions? Where is it left wanting? And we have a data advisory group that works very closely with the YPLA to say, actually, what we also need is we need to know about how learners are achieving elsewhere. And one of the challenges that's been presented to us at the moment is how are our resident learners achieving when they learn outside of the borough? Because if we are going to go for this single planning model, then are they equally successful when they travel, you know, to the borough next door or to the borough in three boroughs' time? So they've worked with local authorities, have worked with their neighbouring boroughs to talk about that cross-border travel and how cross-interests and particularly displacement did provide us with a great amount of fun and entertainment in terms of some challenging discussions. Using those findings to articulate a clear set of commissioning statements was a core part of the process. And the involvement of 14 to 19 strategic partnerships has been mentioned a number of times this morning and has been key in terms of trying to get people's, you know, sign up to what commissioning priorities should be at a local level. We then work with 14 to 19 coordinators across London to say, and how can we make sure we've also got a view of that at a regional level? Next bit of the process was the local authorities agreeing individual contributions, and they literally did go out and sit with, and this varied in different boroughs, but there was some level of involvement in every borough, sitting there with their LSC counterparts saying, so what does planning dialogues look like? You know, what do you talk about? You know, how does the principal, the chief exec of a college, talk about what their strategic priorities are for the coming year and what changes they're envisaging making for a whole host of reasons, because they're quite often closely involved in the economic and sustainable community agenda within their local authority. So they're used to having those sorts of discussions. Then we did engage in that sort of moderation exercise, and one of probably the biggest sort of challenges to us, and I would argue successes, was that we did actually manage to agree a proposal for growth across London. We had a small amount of growth funding, and we managed to engage all of the local authorities in having a discussion about how that funding ought to be allocated and allocated across the borough. And we managed to resist the temptation to divide it by 32. What we then did was we took the regional commissioning plan through the leaders committee, and leaders committee actually did sign it off. So we took the whole governance structure and tested it completely, both through local authorities with 14 to 19 partnerships, right through to leaders finally submitting a plan which went off to the shadow YPLA. So that's been an interesting experience, and we have had some successes in that, and I think I am pleased about some of the successes in terms of formalising the governance. Very reasonably, local authorities and providers very early on were asking questions about what rights have you got? You know, what authority do you have to speak to make decisions on behalf of us local authorities, us providers? So formalising that governance structure across the local authorities was very important, and acknowledging the role that that leaders will and members and councillors will take in that. We've done a lot of work around local authority support and capacity building. We're not there. No local authority, I don't think, in London would say, yeah, we've got it sorted now. We haven't got, you know, still a level of modesty around. But nevertheless, there's been a lot of development in that, and that's been both the technical knowledge of what does demand-led funding mean through to what do we mean in terms of a strategic planning arrangement that we need for the providers and the authorities around us. We've done some good stuff around collaborative working. When we talk about the regional planning group, we actually do mean including the YPLA. We do mean including Government Office for London, including the LDA, because we all sit round the table together, and actually it's the joint product of our activities that we're talking about. And we have done a lot to try and align both young people and adult agendas, because young people haven't spotted this bit about, you know, you're a young person for that amount of time. You're 14 to 16 and you fit into that bit, then you're 16 to 19 and then you something else. You know, they will learn, they'll learn where they want to learn, they'll continue to wish to learn or not wish to learn post-19. So we have to have a sort of a signed up and joined up process to this. We've been actively involved in provider engagement, making sure that we do talk with the AOC, that we have got a relationship with the Association of Learning Providers, that, you know, we recognise that actually we've all got an interest. And we've been talking recently, I've been talking with Malcolm, who was talking earlier on about how we also engage with school sixth forms across the whole area rather than just through DCSs. We've done a lot of work around consensus building and managed to get an agreement on growth was very significant because actually a lot of what we're going to need to be able to do into the future is going to be about where can we achieve consensus. We're not necessarily always going to achieve that, but wherever we possibly can, that sort of swift of people to, you know, shifting towards a single position is being useful. And it's not as though we all have a different direction of travel. You know, you'd struggle to find people who won't say, actually, this is all about raising participation, increasing achievement. Of course, it's all about success for young people and an inclusive agenda. So we've had some experience of decision making and we've had some experience of identifying the challenges. And we've identified what some of these sticky issues are. Infrastructure growth and displacement. I mentioned academies. We've also got a legacy of building schools for the future, commitments to new sixth forms. We've had real sticky issues around displacement. It was mentioned earlier on, but how do you agree that actually that development is going to be created by learners moving from somewhere else, particularly when what you recognise is that it's not very easy to identify where that somewhere else is. We invented a new term this year, which was domino displacement. So the learners don't come from that one organisation. They come from, because that's very popular, you know, and we'll fill anyway, they come from the organisation, the provider further down the line, who was their sort of third choice. Academies I've mentioned, data I've mentioned, mobility and the assumed decrease in the cohort size. John's just shown you the picture for London. There's a lot of challenge to assumptions around what's happening with cohorts, particularly when you look at a very mobile, you know, like learner base that we have in London. We have young people come into London and move on very quickly sometimes, and that can make real changes within local authorities. And this potential oversupply of level three places. And then we've got all those usual issues as well. You know, we've still got high levels of dropout at 17. You know, it is about IAG, completely recognise that, but it's also about the level of choice and curriculum offer that's available for young people. So there's still a lot of the normal things that we've got to be able to do. And ultimately, it is about how we do meet that commitment to raising the participation age. We're really, really clear that simply doing more of the same is not going to be sufficient. Those young people who are not engaging, and in London we've done great, you know, we've already hit our 2000 and whatever target in terms of NEET. It's 5.3%, it's not so bad, except it's actually about 10,000 young people. That's an awful lot of young people who are not expressing demand at the moment. So a demand-led system is not meeting their needs. So we do have to do something very different, and I think that's been echoed this morning already. What are we trying to get to? We know what we're trying to get to. You know, people have already referred to that, and John specifically mentioned the missing piece of the jigsaw. We've got to take account. This was partly about local decision-making and local accountability. We have to make sure that that's there. We have to have something that's coherent across London. We do need an entitlement, a full entitlement that young people can draw on. And simply better outcomes for more and more young people. They do need to be successful in the system. They need to be successful if actually we want the economy that we and the success in London that we're seeking for lots of reasons, because we do need communities where young people have experience of being in a successful education environment, who move into employment and can create sustainable communities that they can then, you know, like prosper within. Thank you.